Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. What happens when you're blind and then you find that you're losing your hearing? This week, we'll find out how one person approached that.
We'll speak with Keith Wigglesworth about being blind, about losing his hearing, and about how a pair of cochlear implants has expanded his horizons. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is that cochlear implants can change your life for the better. Here's Keith Wigglesworth.
There is a good book, Bard, and it's called something like How Going Digital Made Me Human. And that's true of me, I would say, because he had cochlear implants, and what he was basically saying was, you know, there are computers running my head now or running my ears, but that has made me more human. And I'm the same way, because this has brought me out in a way that I could never have conceived that I would be able to return to 10 years ago. I'd not totally given up, but my feeling in, say, 2004 was, this is how it's going to be, and this is what, you know, you got to make the best of it. So I didn't think about, no, it's not over, but it's not great, but I'll do the best I can. And then everything changed, and when it changed for the better. And this is one time, you know, there are people that believe, you know, everything's going downhill, and in some ways, yeah, life does that. It goes downhill. But for me, this was a point where everything went so far up, and it was so much for the better. It just changed everything.
And if you want to know more about the book that he referenced, we'll have that information in our show notes associated with the show.
We think you'll find Keith's story fascinating about the differences between cochlear implants and hearing aids and how each works and how they've worked for him. Let's start by meeting Keith Wigglesworth and learning about the impact of hearing loss on a person who is already blind.
My name is Keith Wigglesworth. I'm from Rockingham, North Carolina. I'm 62 years old, and I've been blind since birth.
Now, I understand this was a congenital hereditary disease that you have?
Yes, that's right. It was called Nourey's syndrome. It ran in my family, this among with blindness and hearing impairments and even much worse in some cases. I think I got on the better end of the stick, although it sometimes did make me wonder. But blindness and a lot of other neurological problems developed because of this.
So you're old enough that you probably went to schools for the visually impaired when you were young? You were not mainstreamed?
Yes, I did. I went to Governor Moorhead School, which was the North Carolina State School for the Blind, from kindergarten through eighth grade, and then went home to high school and then to college.
And what did you do for a career?
I did a little radio work in college, but I knew that what probably wasn't going to be my career. I sang and did some musical stuff for a while, but then I began to say, well, social work or rehab or whatever. So that's where I got into the social work end of it, and jobs and opportunities came along, and I sort of went with that. Now, I'm basically, I guess you say, retired, but I'm very busy doing a lot of things.
Now, the other thing we wanted to talk to you about was the fact that over the years, you gradually started to lose your hearing.
Yes. I noticed it began when I was, I think, in junior high school, but it was just so slight and it was so small that I hardly noticed it, but it was very slow and very, it would come and go as much as anything else and wasn't anything to panic about, or at least I didn't early on.
So at what point did you get hearing aids?
I got hearing aids when I was 26 and I was working as a social worker, and I got my first set of hearing aids, and they were wonderful things. Hearing aids are wonderful things when you first get them especially, but they can be prone to having problems in themselves, and sometimes, in some cases, as in mine, the hearing gets worse while the hearing aids stay the same, and you have to switch models and grades after a few years and that kind of thing. But when I first got them, they were a great help.
So besides having some potential difficulties at work in terms of communicating and interacting with people, as a blind person myself, I rely on my hearing for a lot more, for, you know, knowing the world around me, for my environment, for navigating, and for just a lot of things in daily life. And I'm wondering what your experience there was.
Well, I'm with you. I had problems with that, but at the same time, as a friend of mine told me, we're audio people. We need our ears. We need to hear. If we can't hear, we're really not dead, but we have to learn some other things, and that's just a whole nother story. And that was hard, and it got harder and harder. It got rough on my marriage at times. And what was happening was things were happening at a clip that I didn't even understand. And so it was such a thing that it was hard to deal with. And sometimes I did well with it, and sometimes I didn't. I always try to look on the brightest side that I could and make the best of it. But it wasn't fun a lot of the time.
Can you describe the nature of your hearing loss and what things sounded like?
My whole problem with my hearing was, for the most part, it wasn't just lack of sound. In fact, it wasn't lack of sound. My problem was my hearing became distorted. As I used to always tell Nancy, my wife, I could hear everything. It was just the way that I heard it. And that was the problem. If you would think of listening to an analog FM station and turn the dial slightly off the channel, you know, you're kind of getting the music, but it's sounding very lousy. That's how I heard.
So hearing aids wouldn't particularly help that issue, I would guess. They just amplify the noise and the distortion.
Yes, that's exactly it. That's what hearing aids are supposed to do, generally. But it was the best we could do and the best we could get at the time.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is cochlear implants and their special benefits for people who also have vision loss. Well, of course, the internet is full of information. And here's a quick quote from the American Academy of Otolaryngology. A cochlear implant is an electronic device that restores partial hearing to individuals with severe to profound hearing loss who do not benefit from a conventional hearing aid. It is surgically implanted in the inner ear and activated by a device worn outside the ear. Unlike a hearing aid, it does not make sound louder or clearer. Instead, the device bypasses damaged parts of the auditory system and directly stimulates the nerve of hearing, allowing individuals who are profoundly hearing impaired to receive sound. And we will be hearing from the patient's perspective what this experience has been like.
Can you give us a physical description of your device?
The sound processor goes from a magnet that my head is magnetized, and it is. I have a magnet on each side of my head, so I have to be careful with MRI scanners or whatever, but they're getting better with that even, I think, now. But I can pull this magnet off my head. Kids love it when I do that. I'll pull it off and say, there's the magnet. Now it's just hanging there. But I put the magnet on, and then there's the sound comes back. So it's very easy, very portable.
So there's an external unit that has the power and some of the connections to the outside world that sort of connects via a magnet to what's inside your head.
Yes, exactly. I have a little thing that goes around my ear, behind the ear, basically. And then I have the magnet. The magnet is what powers the magnet in the head, you know what I'm saying? And it fires up when I put it on in the morning. Oh, and by the way, there's another interesting thing. At night, I shut everything out. When I go to bed, I go to sleep. I'm off till morning or whatever, till I'm awake. I wake up myself or whatever. That takes some getting used to, but it's not too bad.
So the piece on the outside, it just kind of looks like a plain, large coin?
Yeah, it's a coin about the size of a quarter. It's a little magnet, and the magnet adheres to the magnet in my head. Now, you have to be careful because it's not a tight, and you don't want it too tight. So, in fact, I think if I got on some big roller coasters, there would probably be some problems with that, or I'd have to put the thing away or put it down or take it off, you know, ride without it because it can fly off. We do have people who, you know, go swimming, But you got to be careful, I think you'd be very careful, but I err on the side of caution with that kind of thing. But there is a lot you can do with it. Kids tumble and play, and as long as they know the limitations they've got and can deal with that. For example, one of the things I was reading in the entry about cochlear implants last night was that on Wikipedia was that they, kids, children have to be careful if they do too much on these little plastic slides because static electricity can do crazy things with the implant, reset things, and things get goofy, and they don't know, you don't know where you are, and that kind of stuff, if you're not careful. So that, if you know your limitations for your age and for your interest, it's pretty safe.
You must have gotten your first cochlear implant about the time they first became available, right?
Yes. One day, I was having a hearing aid checkup on my last set of hearing aids. This was in 2004. And the assistant audiologist said something to me that I wish I could find her now because she doesn't know how profound and life-changing what she told me turned out to be. She said, have you ever thought about a cochlear implant? And I said, I've thought about them, but they cost money, and I don't have this, and da, 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 da. She said, well, I used to work for a guy, a doctor in Raleigh, North Carolina, who did this, and he's implanted several, and the results are just out of this world. You should really look into this. When I heard that, I began my research. And my research then consisted of Google. And so from that, things just began to build, and I began to see things and read things about it. And I was looking at a website of a type of implant, and they were showing testimonials from people and the experiences they'd had with it. And I said, I'm an optimistic person. I'm a believer in a lot of things. But I said to my wife, I said, there's something going on here. I said, either all of these people are lying through their teeth or this is some kind of miracle. Because what they were saying was so consistent. And this was from so many different people in so many walks of life and doing so many different things. And it made me believe that maybe there was a possibility. I knew there were so many barriers. I still had a hard time. Anyway, one thing led to another, and I began to email and look into the possibility and got to a clinic, had the exams done, and before I knew it, I was scheduled for a cochlear implant.
What are the requirements to qualify for a cochlear implant?
Your hearing has to be so bad that they always say, if you go for this, it's a test you want to fail. And I failed it wonderfully, because my hearing was down to, like, I think maybe 5% of normal hearing without, hearing aids, so that's how desperate I was for this kind of thing.
Well, I guess that's a good point at which to try the surgery.
Can you describe the procedure from the perspective of the patient? I mean, I assume at some point you get anesthetized and you wake up and there's things in your head, but skipping the part you slept through.
I did it as an outpatient surgery, and I was actually in the hospital as a patient for slightly less than 24 hours. But they prepare you for surgery, and you put you to sleep, and you don't know anything. And then the next thing you know, I remember waking up in pain. Of course, I was hurting from the incision, but the surgery was over. But I thought, hey, wait a minute, he's still in there. No, he wasn't. But the surgeon actually opens the area and does it with a little saw. He puts the implant package itself. It's very small, probably size of a pack of Chiclets or a little gum or something like that. Tests it for integrity and basically closes it up. And then the healing begins. And then you do the activation and about 2 weeks later. And this is where the excitement really starts. It's almost emotional when I even think about it now. I'm remembering it. But what basically happens, a friend told me before this surgery that I was getting some opinions about what it was like. She said, think of a Star Wars game going off in your head, because that's what it sounds like when it starts up. You hear this tones. The audiologist has things set up, and she's doing some testing to make sure everything is ready and prepared. And then when she thinks you're ready, she says, okay, here we go. You're ready? And she throws a switch, basically. And that switch activates the implant and the modular thing that's in there, the processor is what I'm trying to say. And then once that's activated, you're going, and things begin to happen fast. Neurons fire, and that's what the noise that you hear or that I hear in my brain is. Things are being activated that have not been activated, if ever, for years and years and years and years, because this really is literally a turn-on. And when this happened, the first thing I knew that my life had changed. At first, everything sounds a bit goofy and strange, but what was the wildest thing to me was the audiologist said, she said, "Mr. Wigglesworth, can you hear me?" And I said to her, I said, "Marcia, I said, you sound strange, but I understand everything you're saying." And that was the second I knew that my life had changed forever.
And how long does it take to get used to the new sounds and for things to settle down?
Things begin to straighten out, but it takes some time. It takes a few days. You get to get used to some new noises, and things sound a little crazy and a little strange, but it gradually straightens out. In fact, we always tell people that are getting new implants that the first day is the worst day. It only gets better. And boy, I'll say the first day was fine with me, but it did get better. But some people tire easily and they have to shut it down for a while or get some rest. But it's worth it. And it was to me then, and it is to me now.
So I guess there's several issues in making the transition here. It's not like you all of a sudden wake up from the surgery and they turn this thing on and you can hear perfectly. You said at first you were hearing voices a kind of strange way, and that was a little difficult.
Yes, all the neurons are firing and trying to make sense of it. And at first it isn't making much sense. But I knew I was getting better. We were driving home that first day, and I could hear on the radio that we're giving the station ID, and I could understand it. The voice sounded a little strange, but I was hearing it, and that was the important thing. I said, "Wow, there's the clarity I was after. Holy cow, I couldn't believe it." In fact, I talked to a friend the second day on the phone just to see if it would work. I really had no idea. So I was trying, and she was flabbergasted. I could hear her and understand her.
Even over the phone?
Yes. It was really wonderful. At first, I would sit by the TV and listen to the TV, and everybody at first sounded like Alex Trebek or something, you know, but it took some getting used to, but it was working. Music didn't sound very good right at first, but music now sounds very fine, thank you. Although I must say, music has turned out to be better than I ever thought it would be. It's not perfect. Cochlear implants have not been designed for music as such. It's been designed for the processing of words, language, that kind of thing. But music has been a side thing, and now they are trying to begin to incorporate more things in that. So that is a plus, and it's a very good plus to me.
You make the implant sound like it was a fantastic improvement in your ability to hear, even over the most modern hearing aids. Did you run into any problems?
It did create a few problems, particularly with a group of blind people. For example, I remember one time I was invited to work for a week at a camp for blind children in South Carolina, and we were walking along the sidewalk, and somebody would say something to me, "Keith, this way." And unfortunately, this way, when you hear everything out of your right ear, as I was doing then, really, my left side was non-existent, because when I got the implant, I was told, first of all, not to wear hearing aids for 6 months, because she wanted me to get me used to having the implant and dealing with that and all of the good things that it did and getting used to it, which sounded fair. In fact, it sounded such a good idea that 6 months later, I went back to my left hearing aid, and I kept it in for maybe a half an hour, and I said, "I'm done with this. I ain't going to do this no more." I mean, that's how much the change was. So somebody said walking across town and flying off to Mars, that was how different it was. So the left side was useless as far as hearing goes, but everything came out of that one side. So when anybody said, "Go this way," this way could be half a mile away from the way I heard, but they couldn't know that, of course, if they didn't see that.
So then 5 or 6 years later, you decided to have the same procedure on the other side and get a second cochlear implant?
Yes. One of the questions that a friend asked me right after I got the first one, she said, "Okay, when are you going to do the next one?" And I said, "Gee, let me get used to it." But then thinking about it, she said, "You know, it would be nice, though, if you could, because, you know, you'd have that balance and get to hear stereo, real stereo like it's meant to be, you know." And to me, at first, just having one and hearing as much as I was through that was helpful.
So you must have found it particularly helpful as a visually impaired person to have two cochlear implants. This must have really helped with navigation, knowing your sense of where you were in a room, who was talking.
Exactly. And that was part of the rationale for getting the second one, not just for me. I had wanted it or I'd thought about it, but like I said, I wasn't going to be greedy and say, hey, let's go for two, although eventually we got that way. But that was part of the justification for the university in North Carolina that helped me to do this for the second one, that since I had the first one, it would just make sense for navigational purposes, if nothing else. Of course, there was everything else, too. But it would be good to have that. And so they used that for the rationale, and that worked out as it turned out. We knew it might not go forward, but it did, and we were lucky. So
you've talked a lot about how much better you can hear and understand speech using the cochlear implants, and that's awesome. I mean, that's really awesome. But the special interest of most of our listeners is how would this affect me as a person with a visual impairment? So can you talk about how the cochlear implants affected your abilities to navigate and otherwise compensate for your visual impairment?
I think it has helped a lot. One thing is that before the implants, my wife was never one to be wild about me going places and doing things on my own with my hearing the way it was, because it was pretty obvious I needed help. But now it's different in that it's more like, yeah, if you can do it, go ahead. You know, go ahead. Oh, there have been problems. I mean, I had never broken a bone in my body, and about 4 years ago, I took a slight fall and broke my wrist. I do have to watch balance a little more now, and that's one navigational thing. That's another thing why I think that having some kind of implant was so helpful, because it does make it easier to get warnings or hear things or hear, you know, something's not right or that kind of thing that I would miss and have missed if I weren't careful. I have a better ability now to pretty much kind of come and go and do things that I used to do or have wanted to do and couldn't do before. I'm more my own personality than I think I would have been, because I've always been a people person, and I love nothing better than sitting down with you and having a cup of coffee and talking about things. We can do that for hours. I couldn't do that before the implants very easily, if at all. I mean, a person would have to go to a lot of trouble to want to do that. Now it's just easy. I do it all the time, or I can do it anytime I want. That, to me, has made so much of it. So everything is not the same. It's different, but it's in mostly a good way, in many good ways, actually.
I'm kind of curious, when you got your later implant, it was years later. Did you notice a difference in the quality since the technology might have improved?
Well, it's hard to say. I think, yes, it has, but because I was 6 years between implants, that has taken a little longer to catch up, and it's still catching up, although I most of the time I'm not even aware of it. But I did some research at Duke University, and my first research pal there, my engineer, he said to me when I got the second implant, he said, now start exercising with that. And what he meant was take some time out, turn off the right one, and use your left one more, a little bit more each day for a while until you can sort of bring it up to speed. He said, it'll take a long time. And like I said, it really still hasn't caught up, but it's caught up enough that I'm real comfortable with it.
Well, I would have never guessed that, you know, retraining the brain to accept the input on the second side would actually overwhelm the technology difference.
I had no idea it would be that way either, but that's been kind of the fun little side things that happen.
Do the implants have any special features or special modes of operation?
The processors have audio inputs. In other words, I don't have to wear headphones, or I have what's called a personal audio cable into my processor, and I can plug the other end into my Victor Stream or radio or whatever, and, you know, cool. No headphones needed.
Oh, so you have ways of getting direct input, just like people do from hearing aids, Bluetooth, or other Wi-Fi methods of doing things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right, and that's nice. That's one of the lovely parts that I really love about it. Not a day goes by that I don't use my audio cable in some way.
Well, that sounds particularly great for a visually impaired person who often relies on audio.
Now, for this week's final item, getting more information about obtaining a cochlear implant and also about paying for what can be a very expensive procedure.
So for people who might be considering this, I gather this is a pretty expensive procedure and device. Is this generally covered by most people's health care plans, or is there other ways that people wind up getting cochlear implants?
To some extent, it is covered, but everybody has a story, and I can't tell you how many stories I've read about my insurance wouldn't cover this and wouldn't do this and wouldn't do this, and we had to do tests and we had to do other stuff, and so it can be a bit of a hassle, but there are ways to do, I won't say scot-free, but to work some things out depending on the situation. And there are ways to get that subsidized, and there are ways to get some things done. And I can't tell you some of the wonderful, wonderful people that gave me a lot of financial help and more than you can imagine when I first went down this road.
So if somebody wanted to ask you questions about the possibility of getting a cochlear implant, are you amenable to people contacting you directly?
Very. I'd be upset if they didn't.
And how would they do that?
Okay. My email is hwigglesworth, hwigglesworth, at carolina.rr for roadrunner.com.
Now, if you want additional information on cochlear implants, we, of course, Googled it. And where do we always start? But Wikipedia, and they have a great overview. And then there are also extensive complimentary bits of information at a site from the United States Food and Drug Administration and the National Institute on Deafness and Other Communication Disorders, which is a branch of the National Institutes of Health. And we will have links to those sites in the show notes for this show.
And if you're interested in other resources, Keith gave us information to several other places that offer cochlear implants, and we'll, of course, have those resources in our show notes, along with links to the book that he described earlier in the show.
That's it for show number 1503. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about research on novel eye surgery equipment. Advances in technology have dramatically impacted how modern eye surgery is performed and what procedures are now possible. We'll speak with David Hertwick, a blind senior engineer at Bausch & Lomb. He'll describe some of the new tools that he and his team have developed and how some modern eye surgeries are performed. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.